Blog Talk Radio.
Wachiwara. Wachiwara.
Friday, February 28th, 2014, and this is The Last Word. I'm Michael Lawson. Thomas Fortenberry is on route. And why am I sound here? We have a problem with Skype or something? I don't understand. Oh, yeah, there it is. If we weren't connected for a minute, if you missed it, this is February the 28th, 2014. The 28th day of February. Can you believe that? Beautiful day here in sunny, beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina, the home of the most regressive racial apparatus in the United States of America, under the direction of Governor Art Pope. McCrory is just the flunky that hangs around. We'll get back to him, and I hope it's before he's indicted for this coal ash debacle that he's got himself mixed up into. Yes, Corey is up to his eyeballs in coal ash from his old company, Duke Power. Oh, Duke Energy now. You know, they changed their names like that company called We or She. You know, the company was supplying all the arms in Afghanistan. Yes. We'll get back to them, huh? We're going to have a great show today, and Thomas will be around very shortly. But we're going to have a candidate for North Carolina State Senatorial District 40, Ty Turner, will be with us. Hoping to hear from our regular guest, Dr. Grace Lynn Galloway, and she might have a special guest with her. That's right. Maybe. But I just want everybody to to think about what's going to happen in 2014. You gave away IOU to a criminal. Everybody watch Dallas. You saw how JR's daddy swindled. Well, he really actually didn't swindle the drunk away from his land, and also took Miss Ellie. I mean, he won it in a poker game because the man was drunk and he took advantage of him. Now, normally, God protects babies and drunks, but in this case, he didn't protect him and he lost his land. Well, this is the same thing here in North Carolina. You voters out there that didn't vote, you're the drunks. And you lost your land. You lost your land because you didn't get your butt out and vote. Because you thought President Obama was going to put a chicken in every pot. It don't happen that way. And what else you don't understand is it don't matter who the daggone president is. It could be freaking Fidel Castro. If you have a government that runs, the president doesn't sign nothing. He don't even sign for the food when he gets the food. So I got my phone on here. Unbelievable. Anyway, the thing is that the president doesn't sign, doesn't make rules. The president don't make laws. The president of the United States only can veto. So when you vote, I'm telling everybody, go to the last page and vote backwards. Because the most important people that affect you every single day is the school board, the county commission, and the city council. And that's only in towns like Mayberry, like Charlotte and North Carolina. They don't have a one and all in one system where the mayor's in charge of everything, like in New York City or Chicago or L.A., where you just get rid of the mayor and then you change the whole administration. Here you got these mongrels and I said, yeah, that's what Ted Nugent called the president. I'm calling these guys mongrels because all they want to do is rip off the meat. They're ripping off the bone. That's all they want. They want to destroy it and take us back to the 1840s, not 1860s, 1840s, where women are barefoot, pregnant, and not heard from. That's where it's going to be. And blacks? Don't even talk about where blacks will be. They'll be just like they were in 12 years of slavery. Remember, last week I said, we are what we pretend to be, so we must be careful about what we pretend to be. If you're pretending that you're involved, don't pretend. Because that's why we are where we are right now, with a legislature that's taking away your voting rights, away everything that your forefathers have given you. They have taken it away and thrown it right in the garbage. And all you care about is having your glass of white wine, or maybe you'll have a glass of red wine and some fish and some steak, watch some TV, sit on your deck, and you're fine. Don't buy it. Oh, yeah, I got Time Warner coming today. Isn't that nice? Well, that's another story, Time Warner. I have AT&T. I don't have Time Warner. That's another story altogether. The quote for today is, when you look into an abyss, the abyss also looks into you. We are looking into an abyss right now. If we do not change and get out there and do something about it, we will be engulfed in the abyss. We're on the edge, on the rim right now, because what we didn't do in 2014. And don't say, hey, there's nothing we can do now. Yes, we have been redistricted, and we can't do anything about getting these people out of office for another 10 years. Or just 7 years. It's one of them. 10 years, I think it is. So the problem is they're in there because we didn't vote. Now they have us gerrymandered. So gerrymandered, so even if we vote, it don't make a difference because they have the votes that count in the correct place that adds up. Because, you know, if you're in a county and a county is split up and half the county is in another county, I'll give you a good for instance. I was in the 8th Congressional District. 8th Congressional District was one of the largest districts in the state of North Carolina. This was the district that the guy that we got rid of. See, can't remember the name because he was so pitiful. Congressman, I just erased his name off my website today. But anyway, I'll think of it. Doesn't matter. What they did was they redistricted. We had, I believe, 12 or 14 precincts in the 8th Congressional District. We now have 3 precincts in the 8th Congressional District. Mecklenburg County's 8th Congressional District was large enough to, Larry Kissel was the congressman that we elected. It was large enough, and we voted large enough to put him in office in the 8th. But Larry Kissel did some things that were outrageous. He voted against the president and 4 of the president's major, major initiatives, and the first one being the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. So nobody voted for Larry Kissel, and Larry Kissel lost, and it went Republican. Because, you know, it went Republican because people said it don't matter if there is a Republican in there, because Larry Kissel might as well have been a Republican. And he wasn't like that when he first started. So this is the case. Now we're gerrymandered, where the power of the 8th District has completely been dismantled. Completely. And what did they do with all those other counties that they took out of that district, all those other precincts? They put them in a district, Mel Watts' district, which was Congressman Mel Watts, which is District 12. That is completely packed. What they call packing is when you purposely put more of a race, that's what it was, in one district. They said they did that to make it a solid African-American district. Well, they didn't have to do that because it was a solid African-American district before they put those other precincts in. And I'm in that precinct now. But you see, that's against the law also, because that's called packing. So what they did was, now that they put all those precincts in his district, they now have a larger district that is now for them. That's why redistricting should not be left up to the elected officials, but should be a judge, to be the master to draw the districts. Be nonpartisan, and we'll make all the districts fair, and let the chips fall where they may. But you also have on the other side, I'm not blaming it completely on the Republicans, because the Democrats will want the same thing. And it's because that these elected officials don't want to do their job. And their job is to meet the people, to go out and meet the people. And they don't do that. They will not do that. You know why? Because it costs money and time to do that. It costs money and time to do that. And they would rather not spend the money and time to do it if people aren't going to be a guaranteed vote. But every salesman knows, every person that's ever been a salesman knows, you have to make 100 calls to get 10 people to listen to you, and then maybe get 5 people you can sell. That's just the job. As Hyman Roth said to Michael Corleone, this is the job we have chosen. And that's what we should be doing. I remember one time when I was elected here in North Carolina as the state African-American caucus chair. I went to a county called Franklin County, which is big in the news now, and we will be talking about it in the last hour of the show. I did not notice it at this time, but it is one of the most racist counties in the United States. I wanted to get African-Americans registered and come along and join the African-American caucus. So I went to 30 counties. This one county, which is about 2 hours, 2.5 hours from my house, went there on a weekend, went with my wife, we spent the weekend. I sat there, had 60 people in the room, and before I left there, they had formed an African-American caucus with a chair, vice chair, treasurer, secretary. And they told me I was the first Democratic Party ever to come to meet with the African Americans in Franklin County. Now, I didn't say anything right then, but that was the most outrageous thing I heard, especially when we have, at the time in the Democratic Party, a minority chair whose job was to get people involved. If you don't reach out to get people, people are not going to, as I always tell my daughters about getting a job, you're not sitting in your living room waiting for a knock at the door. Knock, 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 knock. Who is it? Job. Job don't come looking for you. You got to go look for job. People don't come voting for you. You got to look for people to vote for you. And if you don't do it, you lose. And if you don't try to do it, you lose. So we need to understand that we have given up in 2010. We gave up because we gave it away because we didn't think we had to do it. And now people are complaining that they're taking away the early vote. They're taking away all the voting sites. I can't get there because I don't have a car. It's a way away from where I used to live. They're not having Sunday voting. They might have one Sunday voting instead of 3 weeks of Sunday voting. This all stems from us not caring who our elected officials are. And this is not a Democratic Party in the United States. We are a representative party. That means we elect the people to represent us in the House and the Senate. And if we don't like what they're doing, we vote them out. And that's why, starting back to where I left off at, do not vote for the President of the United States first. When you get in the voting booth, go to the end of the pages and vote backwards. Because the people who are at the end of the pages, the school board, the bonds, the school board, city council, county commissioners, insurance commissioner, U.S. House representative, Senate, U.S. Senate. Those are the people that are going to help you more. And before I forget, the judges, the Supreme Court, the appellate court, and the district court, mostly the district court. Those are the people that you see every single day for fighting with a neighbor, for speeding, for getting sued. Those are the people that change your life every single day. And if you don't believe it, take some time and go down to the district court close to you and hear some of the cases. You're not seeing cases in the Oval Office. You're not seeing cases in the Supreme Court. You're not seeing cases, not many, in the appeal of the United States. You're seeing them in your state, in the Supreme Court of your state, in the appellate court of your state, in the district court of your state, in the district courts, in the counties. Those judges break their butts every single day. They have a horrible overload because they want to have a private prison system. And the more people that they arrest to have on the dockets that's overflowed, that can't be handled in the big cities, they now can say, let's have it private prisons. We don't have to pay them health care. We don't have to pay for their eyeglasses. We don't have to pay for their gas. We don't have to pay for their overtime. We don't have to pay them jack. That's why in Texas, Arizona, the governors of those states, and in South Carolina too, you'll see that you have a cousin or a relative that runs the prison system. That's where we have to work. So when you go into the voting booth this 2014, in the primary, especially, pick somebody that you know. If you don't know anybody, somebody that you know that might be a Democrat. Because that's the only way you're going to know. Because if you don't ask before you get in there, you got a major problem. And that's the problem that most people face. They don't ask. They just go to vote for the one person, the mayor. If you ever took a sample of how many people voted for the president or how many people voted for a governor or how many people voted for a mayor, you'll see it's always two or three times more people voting for any one of those people than what they vote for their lieutenant governor or their Supreme Court justice in their state, or their district judge, or their county commissioner. They're always less because people go in there, vote for president of the United States, and disappear. And we should make it so. Just like you do a form online, you can't go to the next page until you fill out all the lines. Then people will have to take something in there with them to read because you can do that. So it's like I always say, there is a major, major process to voting for the people in our district courts, appellate court, and Supreme Court. You need to vote for them first. You need to vote for them first. And then go to your Board of Education, County Commissioner, City Council, Mayor, and up. So start at the bottom. Get the information of who your judges are in your district. Find out who they are. If you don't want to do the research who they are, just find out who they are. Someone will tell you. Anybody will tell you. You can call up. You don't have to go down. You don't have to give your name. You say, look, who the judge is running? Call your Republican Party. Call your Democratic Party. Because I'm talking to both of you. Neither one of you vote. And you're allowing these people who are in there, who do vote, run the state in your name and dirty it in your name. Just like what's happening in Jersey right now. We're going to do some more information on Jersey. Jersey has been voted the most corrupt city in the last 62 years, since 1942. Every mayor from Hoboken to Trenton to you name it has been arrested. I believe it was the mayor of Trenton. Every mayor of Trenton since 1942 has been arrested and indicted and is serving time. The only mayor that didn't happen to was Cory Booker. The first mayor since 1942 that wasn't arrested for bribery. The first mayor. Did you hear that? The first mayor. How he got out of that, no one knows, but it's just amazing. Every single mayor was indicted and sent to jail. Cory Booker broke the cycle, and I hope this next mayor, I didn't check him out, so we'll have to check him out, see if we can do that for next week. But right now, let's hear a little bit of a little more of Cal Jada. Love him. Day in the life of the king. I want to tell you, I just love that tune. But I want everybody to remember something right here. We were talking about voting. There is a guy named, what is his name? He's the godfather for the Conservative Party. And this is what he had to say.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So you heard that. They don't want everybody to vote. That's the reason why they're taking away the precincts. That's why they're taking away Sunday vote. That's why they're taking away souls to the polls. That's why they're cutting the amount of voting machines in your precinct. Wake up, people. Wake up. And as Kymon Roth said to Michael Corleone, as I said before, just listen.
And I said to myself, this is the business we've chosen.
That's what he said. This is the business we have chosen. We have someone who's coming online with us right now. And I think she's going to be able to help a lot of people in the business they have chosen. Hello, caller. Who's this? Hello?
What's going on, okay. Brother? It's Ty Turner. How are you?
Oh, hey. Ty Turner. Candidate. Candidate for North Carolina State Senatorial District of North Carolina.
District 4,
I hit the wrong button, but that's all right. Ty. I didn't have a chance to talk to you at the State Executive Committee meeting, did I?
No, we didn't have that conversation.
Tell some of the people, or tell everybody that's listening right now, what you want to do if you are become the next senatorial state senator from the 40th district in North Carolina.
Well, my big thing is to focus on three main issues that are affecting not only our community but our state. I have a background in healthcare. I focused on signing up as many people for Obamacare. And I also really focus on the social services field. I have over 14 years of experience in that field. But I'm really focusing on the importance of healthcare accessibility for our citizens, as well as quality healthcare with a competitive teacher salary. I believe in public education. Public education is the root of the American value system. I think all of us have been a part of it. And I'm a person who's been a part of it for, all throughout my upbringing. I believe in the development of small businesses, and because I believe that they are the job creators within our community. So these are.
Are you from? Not cutting you off, but are you from North Carolina?
I'm a Charlotte native. I am. I graduated from Olympic High School.
You went to where?
I graduated from Olympic High School. I graduated from North Carolina.
Olympic High School. Oh, I remember when Olympic High School was first built. Did you know a teacher there named, what was the name of her name? Because I think her and her husband, I'll think of it later, but because they were there when it first opened. But now, you went to Olympic High School. So you are, when did you get out of Olympic High School?
I'm the youngest in this race. I'm 33. I graduated in 1999. So I'm stepping up for my generation who hasn't really stepped up to the plate. We're finally up. We're on board now. So I have taken the mantle, and I'm ready to run with it.
Have you run or been involved with the Democratic Party in any capacity before?
I've always been the boots on the ground. I've always been the volunteer. I took the role of a lot of people in my generation at that time, politics isn't for me. Wherever you need me, I'm there. So as a total official role, I'm not really a person who has sat on a board or corralled a group. I've always been the one that when it's needed to be done, need to be done. I'm the nameless person. But I'm that person that anything the Democratic Party needed to do, I've done when it came to working with OFA in 2008 and 2012. I was always there. But it's time for me to step up to the plate. I've always been in my community. And sometimes we get to a point again that I'm that type of person that, I'm ready to take off my suit and ready to put on my boots and go to work. So that's just me.
That's good. Did you know a teacher, because I remember her name now, named Booker at Olympic High School?
Miss Booker?
Booker. Miss Booker?
I don't think she was there by the time I got there, by the time we were there.
She probably was in science.
Say it again?
Probably was in science.
I don't recall that name. It's been 15 years.
No. Sound just like my daughter sounds. That's what she says. I can't remember that. That was 15 years ago.
So long ago.
Yeah. Well, listen. What? Now we're looking at this map now. I was talking about redistricting, the problems we have before we started. Everything that we are right now, we are outnumbered. In the House and in the Senate.
Right.
How do we get,
how are you gonna
people out to vote to get it back? Because it's redistricted every 10 years, correct?
Okay. When the census is done, the party in charge has the gerrymandered.
So it's been done now. So now we're gerrymandered. I was in the 8th district. The 8th district was, as I was saying before, was the largest district. They helped Larry Kissel get elected. And now what they killed the 8th district. I'm now in the 12th. There's only 3 precincts now in the 8th district in Mecklenburg County. All the rest are in the 9th and 12th. Most of them are in the 12th. So now, how do you expect, or what do you expect you get elected. What can you say to these ultra right wing nut jobs that, you know, those are my words, not yours, that are in the House right now, in the State House?
Well, then it's a common ground. But what happens is, I believe, it's like we're looking at Monday.
You're breaking up.
What about now?
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is always defined by ground.
It's going bad again.
No.
Where were you at before? Because you were doing good where you were before.
Do you hear me?
It's bad.
I'm in a crazy day. Let me know if you hear me. I do apologize about that. Hold on 1 second.
Now that's better right there.
That's better right here?
Yes.
Okay. Of course, I believe in common ground when it comes to, you know, the Senate. We're looking at this Senate. We're looking at this 17 majority. After this election, they'll look at probably 29 and 21. So going to the Senate is the most...
You broke up again. You were saying there was an 18-seat majority?
Right. Basically 33-17. And after this election, they're putting the numbers around 21-29. The Senate itself is actually the most vulnerable at being retaken. But the thing about it is going into this year, one thing I always notice is that the voice of the people, when it's loud enough, it makes people realize, again, you got to step up to the plate. If we look at the Moral Monday, rallies is going on in Raleigh. It's one voice. I think that when it comes to the next senator, especially for any district, when it comes to our communities and from talking to certain people in our communities, that they ask for their leader to be straightforward. Let them know what's going on, because when you let them know what's going on in the district itself, they can stand behind you. I see that also when it comes to this legislator session, I don't see as many steep changes as they made when they first got in, because they're going into a new year, new cycle, especially the Senate. You have a governor who's trying to get reelected. So I think it's going to be a little bit of wiggle room when it comes to any type of communication. So I believe in the... So,
it's going to be wiggle room that the governor wants to get reelected. They don't care. I mean, I don't see no room where they would ever do anything but what they're doing now. See, first of all, McCrory is not running this. It's they're going off poll. He runs the state. It's not McCrory.
We know that.
So, you know, There's no, forget wiggle room. They care about, they have control, they can reach it. How are you going to convince these people that are in the Republican regressive party in the state of North Carolina to be civil? These people aren't civil. I mean, you know, you're a young guy in there, they'll just say, hey, you don't know Jack anyway, but you're too young. You're a whippersnapper. What do you know?
I'm going to tell you this right now. you have to come at them on a business mentality. You have to be able to conduct business. You have to be a person who, when it comes to being an effective legislator, okay, we have a lot of cheerleaders. We have a lot of people who can stand by one area. But when it comes to being an effective legislator, they'll come to you when it comes to the business aspect of it. And you have to be straightforward when it comes to the business aspect of it. But you also can't back down as well. And if there's any type of issues that, you know, you believe in firmly, bring them back to your constituency. If we're looking at Charlotte right now, we have the largest media market. We have the largest media market. Use the bully pulpit. That's one thing Democrats don't use. They've always said Obama didn't do it. But right now, when you see the Moral Monday movement, we're using the bully pulpit. Let your people know what's going on, and they'll stand behind you. So that's what I'm really, really focused on as a young man. You can, you might have the majority, but you can't stop my voice. And that's what our leaders, our civil rights leaders, individuals like that, they did not stop their voice. You could not stop the voice. If the voice is louder and you're standing by what you believe in, at the end of the day, your constituent will do the same thing.
Well, and yeah, I'm 100% with what you just said. The thing is that these people who are involved in the creating this outrageous situation we have in North Carolina, where we are the most regressive state in the United States when it comes to voting. I mean, to say you're worse than Mississippi, Texas, and Arizona, my God, it's outrageous. So that means these people aren't reasonable. I was going to talk about this later, but since you brought it up, you're talking about having somebody reasonable. They're going to throw 100-something thousand people off Medicaid in Arkansas. They say,
right.
Oh, it's going to cost us too much money 3 years from now. Well,
right.
How is that possible? I said, well, we're supposed to have a balanced budget. Yes, you can have a balanced budget if you raise some damn taxes. I mean, if you put a half a cent, these people say, no, we don't want to do nothing. They're trying to squeeze people out. It's the old story. I got mine, and I don't care if you have yours.
It's the story of the haves and the have-nots. Right, the have and the have-nots don't the have-nots to have anything, basically.
That's right. And then we have the story with the guy in Arkansas who was drunk, him and his friend. Their car turned over. I can't remember what happened. Rachel Maddow was talking about it yesterday. The car turned over, went down the hill. He survived. He survived, but he's a quadriplegic. He's now a Republican representative from Arkansas. And when it came up to vote to expand Medicare twice, he voted against it, and he used Medicare to survive. When Rachel Maddow asked him, but Medicare, he said, help. He said, yes, I don't want to say anything about Medicare because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. So now he doesn't want to give everybody else the same chance. This is the same thing that's going on here. They got this. They care about us.
One thing about this, I have a plan on the Medicaid extension. And it's kind of radical, but at the same time, I'm a person like this. Instead of complaining about it, what can we do to bypass it? The federal government will do anything they can to support anything when it comes to ideas. I believe in bringing – the expansion money is already there. It's already been allocated to North Carolina. But North Carolina decides they don't want to do it. The reason they don't want to do it is because in 2015, individuals will be penalized, you know, for not having health care.
You're breaking up again. We're losing you.
Do you hear me one more? Do you hear me now?
I hear you now. Right.
Do you hear me now? Okay. Sorry about that. I don't know where I stopped off, but basically in 2015, individuals will be penalized. We all know that. And basically the Republican government right now is, excuse me, the General Assembly, sorry, is they're banking on it to be for individuals to, you know, be outraged when they get these penalties from the federal government for not having been signed up for the ACA or the Affordable Care Act or for Obamacare, however you would like to call it. But I have a plan, again, like I said before, where the power goes into the counties. Meaning these counties can apply for a federal grant, basically. And basically what will happen is those individuals within those counties who do not qualify for the expansion of Medicaid health, those individuals will be able to, the federal government will be able to allot that money for the individuals within that county. And the county will be in control of making sure that these individual citizens are taken care of when it comes to those the health care costs where they cannot cover. So what will happen is the counties would apply for this grant. The grant, federal government will go ahead and give it to the counties. And what happens is when one county gets this money that's already been allotted for, you know, these health care needs, when one county gets this money, every other county will do the same thing. So eventually you have all 100 counties going straight directly to the federal government for this grant. This money's already there, okay?
Okay.
So that's one of my ideas that I'm looking at.
Okay, so you're saying that the federal government won't give the money to the state, they'll give it directly to the counties?
No, what happened is I'm working on a plan right now when it comes to and it's a big part of my legislation I'm trying to fight for, where counties, these individual counties, can go directly to the federal government and let them know, okay, we have this amount, X amount of citizens who do not qualify for Medicaid expansion. You understand what I'm saying? So from that point, the federal government will write out as a grant and give it to those individual counties. And then it's all about applying. And so for what happens is one county will apply for this grant, and once they apply for that grant itself, every other county is going to want that same thing. So eventually, to bypass what's going on in the state government, the federal government will directly give this grant to these certain counties, and the counties will be responsible for the allocation of their citizens. So
okay.
It's kind of radical, but that's one of my ideas because the money's there. It's there.
Okay. That's fine, you're saying that you want the counties, but the federal government isn't going to give no money to the counties. It's only going to go to the state. That ain't even going to happen. And that's the first thing. And the second thing is, how can you trust the counties if you can't trust the states? I mean, I wouldn't give a dime to Franklin County.
Well, you know what? I would. I'm sorry. I got to disagree. If we look and see what's going on with the Health and Human Services right now, honestly, I wouldn't trust the state either. So let's look at that right now. The counties know their people. That's one thing I can't say,
that's,
sir.
Oh, absolutely correct. But that's if you get the right county that wants to do something. Because I tell you right now, you go to Franklin County, you're talking about Mississippi burning.
But
I mean,
again,
like I
said before, there have to be checks and balances in place. That's when legislation, that's when you have to work that out, okay? It's not just giving money to these counties, sir.
No, you're right. I understand that. But the same checks and balances that we give to the states, you're talking about giving to the counties. So I'm saying, hey, what's the difference if the county is not going to do it anyway? Because you got to remember, the counties are still governed by these same racist senators and representatives.
Well, you have to look at it like this. Honestly, in progressive Democratic Mecklenburg County, I don't think that's the case compared to Raleigh right now. But the thing about it is, it's just an option for the counties that want to provide health services for their citizens. That's an option, okay? If you see what's going on with Raleigh right now when it comes to our airport,
right.
These are the issues we're talking about.
Right. So what you're saying is, suppose the state says, we don't want to accept any money. We don't want no Medicare, we don't want no ACA, we don't want nothing. Leave us alone. We let our people just hang out in the woods.
Right. That's basically what they're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. But what I'm saying is that a lot of states are doing that. There's about, I think, 29 states are not accepting anything. But their people are the ones that are losing. So what you're saying is that the federal government will then, if the counties ask the federal government. The federal government will grant them with some checks and balances the money?
Right. There were a lot of cases.
You're breaking up.
Do you hear me now?
No, go ahead.
What happened is those individuals, they will allocate certain grants, okay, to these certain counties. And it's going to be based on the individuals within those certain counties who do not qualify, you know, who meet the federal poverty level just right at this level, okay, at that 15875. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, but what – it's still got to come out of committee in the state. I mean, it's got to come. You're going to be a state representative, and you're trying to get this thing approved with these nut jobs you got out there. You're fighting them off with a gun and a whip and a chair. So
if you're coming up, and I don't mean to cut you off. I do apologize, but if you're coming up as a federal, if you're applying directly as a federal grant as a county, they do that all the time. You know, this is a federal grant.
But a grant is only for one time. Right?
You can make it reoccurring, sir.
Okay.
You can make it reoccurring to the point where you get a Democratic majority. We're looking at that's where you keep it. It's a recurring thing that can basically happen. Okay, this state it applies every year for this amount. This is the individuals that we have that are not qualifying and they need this expansion. So from that point, the federal government, these are things that we can do. Thinking outside of the box. The thing I tell you about this is instead of complaining about it, I say this, instead of complaining about it, let's think outside of the box. What can we do?
Yes.
What could be the options?
I know, I'm not. I'm just trying to be the other side of the coin for you.
Right.
What they're going to say. Yeah. Because the first thing that I would say is, hey, you ain't going nowhere.
I mean, like states' rights.
Right.
Stuff like
I mean,
but
you
you're,
know.
You're circumventing the
right.
government.
Right. And that's what I wanted here when Mayor Fox was here. My main thing, I told him, buddy, I helped him get elected, was we need to make this is not Mayberry anymore. We are the 17th largest city in the United States. This should be a mayor-run city. Get rid of the city council, get rid of the county commission, and have one city council, and the mayor runs all the every single thing in the city, from the police department to the school system to the daggone sanitation, everything. But these people are fighting it because then they won't have their $10,000 a year job. They won't have their they won't get elected. They won't, because these people don't want to do any work. And if you get elected to a position that's got money in it, you're going to have to do some work now. So, you know, and this is the other side of the coin, what you're talking about. And we got the counties. I'm sure counties are going to be scrimping and scraping. Like Anson County is one of the poorest counties in this state.
Right.
It's 80 or 90% African-American. So what you're saying is that they would apply to the federal government for a grant, recurring grant.
Right.
Because the federal government has this money.
Right.
Now, I think our Pope would send out the National Guard and isolate Anson County so they couldn't even get a check. It better be electronic. I'm just saying these people are so racist and so against government only because we have a black president. That's the only reason why. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be talking about this.
Right.
This wouldn't even be a discussion. Because this thing that he wants to do, the President of the United States, was first put forth by the Heritage Foundation that now Jim DeMint runs. So therefore, this is only about a black president. Ain't about you running for office, ain't about anything. It's about a black president. And they want him not to have anything. So again, what I wanted to ask you is that these people, you're going to be fighting these people every single day with a gun, a chair, and a whip. There will be not a time when you will have to breathe. And that's what I'm saying. This is something that I hope you're aware of.
I have all the ready to, you know.
I lost you.
And
you broke up.
Do you hear me now? I have
the
energy. I'm a fighter. I have the energy. And again, like I said before, working for, you know, the social programs I work with, nonprofits, those are people I'm fighting for. Okay, I'm not here to sell you any wolf tickets. I'm not trying to get elected and go to Raleigh, be a cheerleader. This is new blood right now. This is new blood. This one thing. We have the perfect opportunity to inject some new life into this Senate. You know, I have goals and aspirations, and at the end of the day, you know, we can't just have another cheerleader. We can't just stay the course. There was a lot of people who was, I'm just going to stay the course. That's not what you're sending me there for. People are sending you there to make a difference. And I believe that, again, like I said before, I offer that. You know, so I'm ready to go, you know. I'm a 33-year-old man. I can take some punches and get up and keep on. Hey, just imagine if I, you know, hey, I can be a little bit older, you know. It'll be a little bit different getting back up. But, hey, you got to realize, too, you know, that Senate, you know, They won't be there as long as I'll be there. So let's keep it going. So I'm very excited and with this fight, and let's go.
Yeah, if you remember correctly, who's that fool Thomas? They had he was in a wheelchair and they finally carry him out. Strom Thurmond was there in a wheelchair.
Right.
they were using the machines to operate his arms and his mouth and probably his brain. But he's few and far between. But what I want to do is I want to have you back on the show, and I want you with a clear line so we can go into a little more what's going on and how you feel you can definitely get some of this outrageous cobwebs off the entire, your District 40. That's the district I want you to help because I'm in District 40.
I'm telling you this, I'm excited. I'm excited too because again, like I said before, we're at a turning point right now. You know, I think the last youth movement that we had in Mecklenburg County was in the 1990s. When you look at Mayor Cannon, Secretary Fox, Malcolm Graham, and those individuals, and we hadn't stepped up to the plate. So I'm excited, you know, to be one of the youngest, as well as. You know, I think the experience that I've, you know, gained from, you know, the social field as a police officer, the teacher, as a case manager, as a, you know, a female reproductive health professional prepared me for this. And I'm ready to go. I'm ready to fight. So I think this is needs it, and we're moving on.
I have my oldest daughter works for an organization called Crisis. You know them?
Yeah, Crisis Assistance Ministries, right?
Yes.
My mother used to get up 5 o'clock in the morning waiting in line back in the day.
Is that right? And so I need Crisis now the ones that goes out with the police when they have problems and whatnot.
Right.
Is this the same one? I can't hear you. You broke up.
Say it again now.
Hello? Yeah, no. Crisis, the one I'm talking about, is the one that goes out with the police when there's problems and they talk to people who are in need, maybe hysterical or mentally have mental problems. Is that the same one?
No, I don't know if it's you have. They call it a crisis. It's basically what it's called when the individual.
Oh no, this is called crisis.
But you have Crisis Ministry. It might be something different, but I do know.
Oh no, this is not ministry. No, different one.
Okay.
Anyway, I want to have you back, and I want you in a place where you have a clear line.
I promise you, I will.
Okay, and I want you to think about some of the things that we talked about, but I want to get into how are you going to manage the rest of the campaign to get your point across to as many people as possible.
Right.
All right. And I just want to thank you and thank the young lady. What's her name? Was her name Anna? No.
Ashley.
Ashley,
yeah.
Right.
Ashley, yeah.
Definitely
Ashley, thank you. Campaign manager.
Tell her to get in touch with me sometime this weekend, and we can set up another day.
All right, no problem. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a pleasure speaking with you today.
It was great speaking to you, too. Thank you.
All right. Have a great one.
Bye-bye. You too. That was Ty Turner, who is running for Senatorial District 40. Right. So I was, I hope everybody wasn't too upset with me when I was giving a lecture about voting and why we are where we at, right, where we're at right now, because, hey.
Yeah, but the thing is, if he wants to go into the lion's den, he's going to get it every day.
I said, with the daggone gun, whip, and chair. And let me see here. We're talking, that's the wrong one. That's the wrong one. Hey, anyway, here we are. It's Friday, so that means it's Dr. Grace's Corner. Yes, it's Dr. Grace.
Hello, Michael. Let me tell you something. I hope you do upset some people about when if they didn't vote. I hope. Don't apologize. Apologize for upsetting people. They need to get upset.
They need to be upset because the problem is by them not doing what they're supposed to do, they're getting me upset and causing me to have the same problems they have.
I know.
I mean, it's like casting on the germ.
Oh,
I know.
Put us all back to 1860.
Yeah. Right. And you hear about the people in I don't know where it was, in Dunkin' Donuts, the people came down with the virus because one of the people got sick and was passing the germs on.
Yeah.
Give a break.
Didn't think to wash their hands. Didn't think to do something as simple as washing hands. That's all it was. Just wash your goddamn hands.
And, you know, you need to wash your hands to protect you from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is the truth. Just wash your
hands. Tell us, what's the story, Dr. Grace? What's going on? Tell us from the top.
There's a lot of stuff going on. First of all, we had a great, great, great training session last Saturday. Casey Mann and Matt Hughes and Cliff Moon came down to the 8th District, and we had a fantastic training. The first hour was spent on Vote Builder 101, and then we went from there to fundraising. And, you know, there's stuff that you need to know how – you got to know how to fundraise. You can't just expect to go out there and say, give me money. You got to know how to do it. And Casey and Matt and Cliff did a great job.
You're not supposed to sit on the corner with your hands bent like cup and say,
you know, that's what some people think. And then the second half of the day, the afternoon, was spent in what we call field operations. And that, essentially, was how to win. Now, we talk about voter registration. That's important. That's very important. But what's more important is targeting the areas, knowing what your win number is, and targeting the areas, putting your effort and your energy into the areas where you have a higher probability of getting people to the polls than other areas. And that is how you can turn red districts blue. You've got to look at the numbers, and you've got to figure it out. It's got to be a strategy. You can't just blindly do. You know, in the past, we used to just do, phone banking, right? And they would give you people to call. They'd just arbitrarily just give you a list of people, and half the time, you have people hanging up on you, maybe more than half the time. You get cussed out. This training, this field operations training, reduces that incidence and that, you know, getting cussed out and people hanging up on you by a dramatic margin, because you're only going to be targeting people that you know either did not vote, but they're likely, but have been voting Democrat, and we can essentially get them out the poll and registering and targeting people that are in all probability Democrats but have not registered to vote, getting them vote registered and getting them out to the polls. That is how we win. I'm never going to go into any more detail because I do not want the Republicans to get our strategy. Brilliant strategy. Brilliant.
That's
absolutely brilliant.
Just to get people to the voting place, not just talk to them about it, not just anything else, it's to actually get them to
exactly. Well, here's an example. Okay, let's just say that you have a county that has 10 precincts. And of the 10 precincts, you've got one precinct that has a predominance of Democrats, okay, but the voting margin is only 44% of these Democrats actually turn out. Well, okay, if you're predominantly that district, if that precinct is predominantly Democrat, we're going to target that district and get 100% turnout. You can win that way.
Well,
if you have a precinct that is predominantly Republican and you have a Democratic base that is only maybe 20%, but you've got 20% of the entire electorate in that in that particular precinct, but out of that 20% of Democrats, you've got an 80 or 90% turnout, you're good. You're satisfied. You're happy. It doesn't take much to get the remainder out. But if you've got a precinct that is that has got a high Democratic base, or but the turnout of Democrats is low, that's the one that you got to target. Get them out.
Okay, but here's what I've done. You know, like, I was in the 8th District. The 8th District is the one that got Larry Kissel elected. I mean, because they're so huge. Well, ripped us apart. They ripped us apart. There's now only 3 precincts in the 8th District. So how do we win the 8th District when they redistrict it so bad?
Okay, let me tell you. The 8th district is over 40% African American.
Correct.
Okay? But not all are registered to vote. So let's get those African Americans that are eligible to vote. It's 40%. If we can get the usual turnout of African Americans, the usual voting is the 98% of African Americans vote Democratic. If you get 98% of 40%, do the math. How much of the other racial groups do you need? Not a whole big margin.
Oh, no, you're right.
Remember,
But if you got that 20%, say you 98% of the 20%, so you're saying, say you got 19%, 18.5% turnout.
Uh-huh.
Is that enough to...
No,
you're
talking about precincts now. You're asking about the 8th district. The entire 8th district is over 40% African American.
That's what I'm saying.
So what we need to do is target the African American voters.
Right.
In every single precinct, we target the African American voters. We target the Hispanic. We target the Asian that are more inclined. We can target the people that are registered Democrats but may not have voted in the last election.
Well, this
and you get them out.
If you target that group, which would say it's 19.5%, okay?
Right.
Is that enough to win that?
Yes, it's every single precinct. Yes.
Okay.
If we increase the number of people that vote in every single precinct by a mere 10%, we can win.
Okay, so you're saying that even with the redistricting, we can still win. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
you got it.
We don't, unless the people show
up. You got it.
Right. Okay. Well, we're talking about heavy lift now.
It's a heavy lift, but we
got to
do it.
They're going to be out there lifting with you because Joe and the baby will be lifting with you.
I expect to see you there too, Michael. You'll be lifting right along with me, buddy.
Listen, I'm in the 12th district now. I don't even have to turn out.
You may be in the 12th district, but let's face it, your listening audience, you know, 8th and 12th and 9th. Hello.
Well, you know, the thing is now, see, this is what gets me. This is against the law, what they did when they packed the 8th district. The 8th district is already an African-American district. Now they added more African-Americans. Oh, we just want to make sure it stays African American. It was going to stay African American. We need to add more people there.
The way they looked at it was that it was the Republican leaning. So what they did was they threw in counties that were traditionally Republican, like Robeson County. It's Republican. It's a red county. Let's face it, Scotland, the red county. So they threw that in, and they carved out portions of Randolph, and they carved out portions of Rowan County, you know, and Davidson, and threw them into the mix. And they carved out the most Republican district, the most Republican precinct. But even regardless of that, we can still win if you look at the absolute.
Yeah, no, I say yes, I know that. I know that. But it's a...
because, look, like the proof of this policy or this technique working is that Republicans have been winning since the 1980s with it.
Yeah.
Because they've always been a lineup. And they turn out their entire base and get and win by just a few percentage points.
Yeah, right.
We just need to do it back because we've got numbers all day long.
Yeah,
we do. And
well,
if you actually look at the demographics of North Carolina and you look at how many Democrats versus Republicans or Democrat-leaning people, if you include the Democrat-leaning people, guess what? We got a majority in North Carolina.
Yeah.
We have a majority. Absolutely.
I'd say it's almost 2-1, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so, I mean, so when you don't win, that means you didn't even get a quarter of your base out.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
And that's why we're in the position right now, which you
that
haven't been
exactly
in
right.
First 40 years, where the House, governor, and Senate was on the other side. Was with the,
That's why
there's another thing we have to do is that we have to send messages to our elected officials that they are not to veer right. Every time somebody says boo to them, they veer right. Now, if we look at Senator Hagan's numbers, when she was standing strong on her ideals, on democratic principles, she was ahead by double digits. Now that she's waffled, guess what? She's behind.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. Because the people you are before are now going to smack you in the face.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's what you know. All right, so where are we at now in developing this plan to get this base out?
Well, this I can't tell you that. I'd have to kill you. Just messing with you. Just kidding.
God, I forgot. That's right. Oh, please. I mean, you send Joe over here, he had to kill me, I know. All right.
We'll do the black ops people, man. We'll have to call the black ops people. Delta Force will come in and park themselves on your front door. Yeah.
That's true, and I don't have my big dog anymore. Anyway, so the thing is, this is the, what? Now, we're talking about 100 countywide now.
Yeah. So what we have to do, and the bottom line is this. In the past, we worked hard, okay?
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with working hard, but I prefer working smart. You know? I really do. Don't waste your time going after people whose minds you will never change. Why call a Republican?
Right.
You're not going to change their mind.
Right.
We'll just focus on the Democrat, and we focus on those unaffiliated that we know lean Democrats. That's it. Don't bother about why. You're wasting your time, and B, you know, the person who's doing the phone banking gets so frustrated and beat down. No, let's not do that. Let's work smart.
You're saying it's a waste of time to call the Tea Party?
Oh, heck yeah. You think? Unless you really want to, you know, play with their minds a little bit.
All right.
I just always call them and say, this is Obama. I'm listening.
Is that now?
Do that. Yeah. Let us know.
Kay, is how is she doing in the polls?
She's not doing well. I mean, she keeps dropping, and drip, you know? And the thing is, she has to find the old Kay back. And the old Kay stood on her principles and stood on her beliefs. And she was good. She is good when she does that.
What would make her change?
I think that, I don't know. people are there's people are telling her, look, you've got to veer right because you've hit. Well, see, every time a negative ad comes out about her, she veers right.
Yeah.
You notice that?
Right.
Every time a negative ad comes out, she veers a little bit right. Instead of countering and saying no.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she needs to do. She needs to counter. But then again, the right is so good at pointing fingers and creating the firestorm that they put her on the defensive. I would love to see her go on the offensive.
Uh-huh.
Right.
She does not need to spend her time playing defense. She needs to spend her time playing offense. Stand on your principles. Stand on what she did. Stand on why and explain why. And, you know, this whole thing with Obamacare where just because the dad-blame site didn't work as well as it should have worked, so what? Is it working now? Yeah.
Yeah.
Are people benefiting now? Yes.
Well, we have over 4 million people now registered.
Yeah.
Four million.
Now, in her favor, as of today, they had 2 more people even join in the race. So they're up to 14 now for her seat, I think. So you're talking about the more people in, that potentially the more diffuse that vote gets.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but it won't be 14 in the primary.
No, I mean, they're running right now for it. But that'll be winnowed down, but still all of that helps if she stays strong.
She's got to stay strong. And I encourage everyone who's listening in right now, please pick up the phone, call Senator Hagan's office. I don't have the number right off the top of my head, but I'm sure you can find it. Call her office and just tell her, stay strong, stand on your Democratic principles, stop veering right. You're not going to win those fools over. We're your baby, and we're going to be there for you. And you know, we love the old Kay Hagan. We love the Kay that stood strong. We love the Kay that ran against Liddy Dole on her record. I mean, her record was strong, you know? We love that Kay Hagan. She's an awesome, awesome, awesome person, an awesome senator. Go back to that, Ms. Kay. Go back to that. We love that.
Where do we have? I understand they had a major meeting down in Washington, where our chairman Randy Bowler is.
Yes.
Now. Okay.
Yes.
And,
absolutely.
What's
yeah, and let me tell you what the handbooks are that Casey Mann printed out on fundraising and field operations and stuff like that. That stuff that she printed out and that she put together, the guidebooks, they're a big hit in D.C. Are you kidding me? You know, you've got all 50 states now going, what? What? What the heck is this? And how come we didn't know how to do this before?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's that strategy. It's that good of a strategy. When you look and you crunch the numbers, I bet you anything, Nate Silver will look at it and he will just die of happiness.
Now that is something that. So this is something that just wasn't put down, it wasn't said. It was, but they have gone out and done it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Not like Mr.
Creek with
the smoke. Not like
this,
Mr. Creek.
This is the same plan that Casey Mann instituted down in Charlotte that won Patrick Cannon the mayoral race because you know he was behind, right? You know he was losing. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he was losing, I mean, by a substantial margin, number one, because of funding, and number two, because, again, working hard but not working smart. So Casey shows up with this strategy, and she says, no, this is what we need to do. And she just took the strategy, enhanced it, did not target every single precinct, but targeted the most lucrative precincts, okay, the ones with the highest Democratic base, and we won. We're going to take the same fighting principle nationwide. Carolina is going to lead the way. We're leading the way.
Thomas just found something on the National Information.
Yeah. The Triangle Business Journal just did a poll 2 days ago, and they actually have her up now. She's in the lead, which is a welcome news.
Yeah.
Kay Hagan? Yes, all right, fantastic. But
right.
we've been sending her messages.
Yeah.
You know, stand on your principles, Kay.
All the Tom Tillis, you know, attacks on her.
Oh, because of Tom Tillis attacks on him. Well, he said, now Tom Tillis is running for that seat, too?
No, he's just a mound.
Yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah, he's running for it. Yeah. Yeah, he's running for that seat, too. Well,
The question is, who isn't running? I think it's just you and me and Thomas.
Well, so our Pope might be running. Oh, he just satisfied to run in McCrory.
No, our Pope just wants to buy the state.
He wants to buy the state.
That's why you have the Koch brothers in, you know, to help out with that spare when you buy states.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
There you go.
So now, have you ever heard of Crisis, which works with the police department, and they go out with them when they have problems. They go out and call. My daughter is working with them now, I guess for the last 6 months, 9 months or so. And it's really a shame that what happens when you think about last night, my daughter was here, and she's like the supervisor. They were called out because this woman was having a mental day, and she was out to the bus driver, and she was thinking about killing herself. Okay.
Oh dear.
Yeah, but she also drives a bus, and she said, you know, I could do that driving a bus. She told this to someone, and that someone called the police department, and they got in touch with her, so they were going to, you know, put her in observation. So the thing is that we don't have the ability to take care of people like that anymore. Since all that was cut out, we have people who are wandering around everyday lives. Yes, they're making it through everyday life, but the stress is just too much for them, and there's no place to go since the Reagan administration, since 1980s, killed everything.
Yeah, we don't have mental health as a national.
What can we do about this? And is that being in the Democratic Party at all, that you're aware?
Well, the thing is, the Affordable Care Act, thank God, covers that too. Yeah. It covers, you know, going postal, but that in dental, right? It covers everything from mental health to dental health to medical problems. And this is how we overcome this. This is how we help people. Because, you know, there's nothing worse than feeling all alone. There's nothing worse. And we have more and more mental health problems. Nothing that a little pill sometimes can't fix. Because many times it's a chemical imbalance. So take a pill. You know, get your chemicals back in balance.
Right.
So,
but what do we do when people need to, you know, they need to take more than a pill. They need to have someone talk to them. They need to be, you know, just quiet for a couple of weeks or something.
Counseling.
I mean, we have no place for my daughter, when she was working with the jails, she was telling me, you know, everybody came into jail had to get a mental evaluation. And she was doing that. And she said in the year she was there, she saw the same people three and four times.
Yeah.
This person doesn't belong here. They belong in a place where they could get help, and we have no facilities. How can
we do. No, we have facilities, but the wait list is about a year or two long. So, hello, if you're suicidal ideations, what are you going to say to someone? Okay, hold that thought. Well, you know, we'll talk to you in 2 years.
But what is it a problem with? Not enough doctors, nurses, or facilities or places in the facility.
It's a combination. I believe in North Carolina, in the 100 counties, we only have between 100 and 150 psychiatrist. Okay, that's it. That is it. We don't have any more.
They took away Billingsley, which was the place, because my cousin used to be a supervisor. That's gone.
Yeah, they took that away. But, you know, then let's go back to the number of psychiatrists in the state of North Carolina. It's between 100 and max, no more than 150. And then they cut the amount of reimbursement. They cut the amount of reimbursement. Yeah, that's all. They cut the amount of reimbursement that a psychiatrist can receive. So most psychiatrists now don't accept insurance. They're private pay. So how many people can afford to pay $95 to $100 for every visit? How many people?
Right. So what you're saying is that they cut the payment that the doctor receives.
Right.
Is this through Medicaid or what? Or just reimbursement?
All of them. Medicaid, Medicare, even the third party, even Blue Cross, all of them. They cut the reimbursement.
Okay. So what is the reason for that? If it was Medicaid, I could say, I can see the reason why they might want to do that, you know, throw these people off the roll. But if they're cutting all insurances, what's the reason behind that?
Profit margin, because the stigma the mindset is that mental health is still a concierge business, okay? So if you're mentally ill, then you can go seek a psychiatrist for Mother's Little Helper and pay. So it's not, the mindset is that no. And then if you're poor and you are mentally ill, fine, we'll just throw you in jail. That's okay because you're poor. But if you're rich and you can afford it, then you can get the pill. You see, it's still the mindset that a mental illness is a stigma. And we know it's not.
The old days.
Well, you know, the topic you said, like abortion, it is. They close up all the clinics for abortion in Texas and Arizona. I mean, you got to go across state to get one.
If you were poor, you had a child, or you died in the back alley. But if you're wealthy, went away to visit Aunt so-and-so and come back, and, you know,
that's right.
Because that's what
that's
other
right.
people can do.
What these people are doing is really trying to make it just like it is in India with the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah, it's like a caste.
There is not going to be any middle ground at all.
You're
There's
the
no
poor
class.
Or you're rich. You're either on that side of the wall or this side of the wall. That's it.
I mean, and I was talking about this guy that was in the wheelchair in Arkansas, who's a representative. You know that case about the guy that is a quadriplegic, and the first two times he blocked the expansion of Medicare, and if it wasn't for Medicare, he'd be dead, because Medicare is the one that helped him survive.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you understand the mental capacity? When he was asked this question by Chris Hayes, he said, well, you had help from Medicaid. Why don't you want other people to have Medicaid? And he said, not that I don't want them, but I don't think they need it now.
It's like asking Judge Thomas. Why are you such an asshole?
These people it just blows my mind, and they don't think there's anything wrong with it. This is the major problem here. They don't think there's anything with.
No, I don't. I think the problem is they don't think. It's just policies that are forced out of these think tanks, like the Koch brothers, Ron, and everybody. They just come up with these policies to destroy the middle class, to concentrate wealth, and to shut down every government service. Because that's what, you know, starve the beast. They want to shut down everything. And they don't care. They simply don't care about anybody or anything. All they care about is that, you know, money.
How does the capacity of going out and helping, having people come to all the doctors and getting them? How is that created? How does it get across to people that you're having something like that?
Do you mean for the free clinics themselves?
Yeah, the free clinics themselves. How do people know that they can come to a free clinic?
Okay, so there are free clinics in almost every county in North Carolina. And essentially, and they're probably, most of the time, the best kept secret. But the way they're diverted to the free clinics is through DSS. So they go to DSS, and you know, and then and they apply for Medicaid, or it's usually word of mouth, because certainly we don't advertise, we don't have to. I mean, we it's word of mouth, you know.
And well, people are desperate.
Well,
yeah.
But you see, but the thing that I'm getting and trying to get here is if these states that are trying to get rid of or reject the ACA, do they have free clinics in them?
Well, that's a good question. That's a very good question. I know that there's a National Association of Free Clinics, and that's the other thing. You know, these people think that's their excuse. So there are safety nets. There are free clinics where people can
right.
go to if they're sick. Yes, but how much? Not all free clinics provide free medication. Not all
that's
free
correct.
Clinics provide free, you know, procedures like x-rays and blood tests. And you know, not all free clinics provide everything. Some free clinics will only treat an urgent care situation, like if you've got a cold and you need an antibiotic, if you've got an infection. You know, it depends. It depends. And then sometimes, most of the time, the free clinic will write a prescription, and now you got to fill it. Well, if you don't have the money, how are you going to fill it?
That's right.
And again,
so,
you got to think.
But those,
go
ahead.
They're only, no, these are when we have no safety net, these clinics mm-hmm. are serving as a last-ditch effort, you know, for
that's
to keep
right.
people out of basically. It's nothing, you know, there's not like it's a medical service and it's just another state service that is offered to the citizens. No, these things are by the definition, they're like your last possible hope of any kind of care because the state is not providing care.
Well, see, that's my next question. How many of these people you see in a free clinic, this is the first time they've ever been to a doctor, like a mother coming in with two young children?
A lot. That mm-hmm. happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Or the mother comes in with the kids, and the kids are so sick. I mean, they've got ear infections, double ear infections. They've got, they are so sick, and they're miserable. You can look at them and know how sick they are. You don't even have to look. You don't have to take their temperature. You just look at them and go, oh, my gosh. And it just breaks your heart. But
right.
mama couldn't afford. But not all kids have Medicaid. And even if they do, you know how doctors are refusing to accept Medicaid, Medicare patients.
So yeah. how would you take care of this? This mother has the three kids come in, the kids are sick, the mother is sick also, and they got bad ear infection and cold.
Oh.
I mean, all right, now they got to get a prescription.
Yeah.
Who pays for it?
In Cabarrus County, in our free clinic, we have a pharmacy, and we carry drugs. No mm-hmm. narcotics, but we carry antibiotics and blood pressure medicines
right.
and stuff like that. Yeah, so we can treat them.
Okay, we can treat
them. Yeah. In some other cases, you know, and then there's the other side of it. That if we have to prescribe a medication that we don't carry, then we like to go
right.
to the $4 list because there are some pharmacies, Walgreens, Walmart, Harris Teeter, that carry certain medications, and the copay is $4 regardless of whether you have insurance or not. So there's
uh-huh.
always that, too.
Awesome.
But we learn how to use all the resources that are possible for us out there. And it's a sad day that we've got to do this for people. It's just, it's sad.
Yeah.
Well, again,
and everyone should.
This makes the argument that if everyone had a functional health care system like we have with Obamacare now, but if we had
mm-hmm.
a functional
yeah.
national health system and we could do preventative medicine in this country, we would save
right.
billions because all of these cases would progress to the
that's
point
right.
of
that's right. The kids that keep all their preventive care visits They get all the appropriate immunizations. They get to see a doctor on a regular basis. Don't get nearly as sick as those who can't.
Right, right.
Then it's the same with adults.
Well, the thing is that I am very glad we had this talk today. And what is the next? Yeah, Reed, what is that?
I want to point this out real quick before we leave, because we were talking about Kay Hagan's race earlier. And I want to point something out. But you were talking about, you know, money at play and whatnot. But I looked it up. The Koch brothers, through their organizations, have already spent over $10 million on her since January in ads against her. They have owned,
and they don't even live here,
this year to spend $30 million by Election Day.
No.
They said, now the people recording this said that it was alarming because this is more than twice any outside group in the country in the last 12 years on any race, and it is more than all the Senate races in the entire country combined.
Jeez.
Combined. So that shows you, if you have any doubt at all, this isn't just a, huh, that's odd. I guess they're really after Kay or something like this. No, this is ground zero. They literally, and if they can take out North Carolina, take out anywhere in the country. But that's how important it is. This isn't, you know, isn't made up. We aren't, like, it isn't rhetoric. That's hard, cold facts and money going after her. And we've got to stand up.
That is for sure. Well, I want to thank our on-call doctor here at Grace's Corner. And I want you to kiss the baby and say hello to Joe. You can kiss him if you want also. We give
I'll
you permission.
I'll kiss both of them, yeah. Yeah. Oh, by the way, listen.
Good. Good.
No, Joe just got back from D.C. where he interviewed General Colin Powell and Harry Wilkerson. And, yeah, it was awesome. Great.
Well,
and General Julius Petten, who was the first black general. Uh-huh.
Yes, we need to have him on. Have Joe, can he be on the show next week?
I'll ask him. Play my theme song again. Bye.
I'll be right down.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you for
that
what
was
you do.
Grace's Corner. Our doctor on call. That was loud. That was loud. Anyway, so you see they're cutting up my yard up here, and that's not even my cable. That's Time Warner.
God love them. You have no rights. They're a corporation. They have rights.
That's right. They're people
too. You have the right to sit back and watch them cut your yard up.
He said, we can't go farther out because there's a right-of-way out there. Well, don't I have a right-of-way?
You are the right-of-way.
Yeah.
That's where you're supposed to be, out on the rail.
No, all the other, the pipes, the water pipe, the electricals, all out there. He said, but it's going to be 20 inches deep.
Here's my yard. You can go around it in the square.
Unbelievable. These people, they're so freaking unbelievable.
Oh.
If this wasn't a Friday, I would be out there fighting whenever they had the police out here.
What you should do is go out there and say, you can put that across my yard if I get free cable.
No, you know what? I got rid of Time Warner. I don't want no parts of Time Warner.
That's why they're cutting up your yard. They look on the list.
Please,
they,
I talk about
you're not one
before.
Of us.
Yeah, I'm not one of that's for sure. Now, so what has happened? Did you see the latest? With this guy Ham and
Ham.
Yeah, what's his name? His name is Ham. Ken Ham from the Creation Museum.
Oh, yes.
You hear about the Creation Museum,
yeah,
right?
He and our favorite science guy.
Bill Nye, the science guy. Yeah. This guy, Ken Ham, he wants to tell us what actually happened to Noah's Ark. You know, there's a movie coming out he's playing Noah.
Yeah.
And
that,
you know
that,
it looks
like
Noah's
Ark, the action film.
Yeah, actually.
Ground's blowing up.
Well, that's because that it was caused by, the flood was really caused by an asteroid hitting in the ocean. Asteroids. And that brought all the water on the land. What do you think about that?
Well, I when I saw it, I thought it was...
I believe that more than I believe the rain for 40 days and 40 nights,
we
got flooded.
So
a 1,000 feet deep.
Yeah.
I believe that.
But I saw the, when all the people were massing
around. Yeah, I didn't see much.
Yeah, right. I thought it was the new 300.
Yeah, well, right.
That's then it was like, oh, wait, Noah, what? Yeah. But they're trying really hard to make it action-y, cool, you know, the catastrophic event movie, you know.
Well, yeah, but, I mean.
I'm just wondering, where's Bruce Willis? That's all. You know, come on.
Maybe he's going to come out someplace.
This week?
No,
there
was no air-conditioned ducts for him to crawl through, yeah. See, that's what I mean.
No air-conditioned ducts on the Ark.
Right. And Bill Nye, science guy, said, look, they built a 510-foot ark, the biggest, most reputable, most knowledgeable scientists, oceanographers, got together to build an ark that represented the ark that Noah had. And when they went out into the water, it broke in half. Now, I just want to know. I just want to know how Noah was able to build an ark with no screws, no metal, just perfectly round bolts that went in, fit perfect, seaworthy. They weren't bailing for 40 days and 40 nights. I mean, how did he build something like that and it didn't collapse?
Well, if it's of any size, no matter what size it is, how do you get all the animals on? Because they take up a little bit of room.
Well,
there's speed and water.
It's just like my cousin.
Uh-huh.
Remember when we went to that film with Incognito? Okay? Uh-huh. Incognito. Where who was the star of that? That was, what's his name?
I remember.
Anyway. Where he went into the guy's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Was the same guy that's playing and winning the nominee for the Academy Award for Wolf of Wall Street. Who's that? Same guy.
Oh, DiCaprio?
Yeah, okay. So he goes into the guy's mind. Remember this? We went here when Mel was here, my cousin?
Inception.
Incognito. No, that's... What was that? I don't know what Incognito was. Inception.
Yes, Inception. Yes, okay. Now I'm with you.
Okay, you're right. What do I know? Anyway, so, he goes inside the guy's mind, okay? He goes inside the guy's mind, and then he finds out, it's not working because he's fighting us. We have to go deeper. We have to go too deep.
Yep.
And then he went three deep.
Yeah.
Then he went four deep in his mind. So remember when he came out of the movie? And we were walking down the street.
Line, you wake up in the other, and you
yeah,
back
right.
Out.
So we remember we were coming out, and we said, "Wow, that's a great movie. I like that." And Mel says, "Well, I didn't believe it after he went into the third layer, then the fourth layer."
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, exactly. If you believed the first layer, how could you not believe?" Well, this is my thing. If I can believe that Noah built an ark 510 foot without any screws, without any bolts, but with perfectly round anchors and fitted, and that ship went out and floated and didn't break in half, I would then believe that he could get all the animals aboard.
Well, you know,
but there's no way. They had the scientific minds who built this.
He had God.
Yes, that's true.
That's why
he had God. But Noah had his hand. He wasn't using God's hand. Yeah. God might have told him how to do it.
He had a mighty wooden hammer, mallet.
Mallet.
He was hammering away.
Yeah.
It all fit perfectly. It was nice.
Everything. Not a, I mean,
haven't
you know.
You, haven't you seen that movie, modern one with the, he makes the ark in suburbia?
Yeah.
Just like that. I think his beard grows every night. You know.
Yeah. Well, he needs some help in order to believe that. And right now, we have the perfect person that is going to help us.
Morgan Freeman.
Along the way. And it's a young lady who's a facilitator, a life coach, a breakthrough artist, a motivating speaker of masses and teams.
Oh, nice.
Miss Kim Grimes.
Hello, hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Thank you, thank you, thank you for this opportunity to share this time with you. I really appreciate it. So I just want to, before I get into anything, just take a moment to say thank you.
That's wonderful. By coming on the show, you're saying thank you.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Did you hear what I was talking about? Now, we're talking about you do motivation. I mean, that's your big thing. And I know we might be off field just a little bit, but, you know, there's a movie coming out, Noah, and, you know, they're talking about how Noah, the flood, actually came from many meteorites hitting in the water, and the water rose up onto the land, and that's why it was like that. And it took like 40 days and whatnot to recede. And when it finally did, he was on top of the mountain. Okay.
Right.
Now, you know, I was in Vietnam.
Thank you for your service.
It rained more than 40 days and 40 nights. And we weren't flooded. Now, we were flooded out on the first floor. But that's as far as it got. So, I mean, it got so bad, raining, that we had to put 100-watt light bulbs. When I first got there, we had barracks. We put 100-watt light bulbs in our locker so our clothes wouldn't mildew. I went through two garrison caps, so I know that. But when we got into our own dorms, it was fine. But what I'm trying to say is, how do you motivate somebody to do anything?
Wow.
I mean, your main, do you have to say, well, you know, these people, this is their problem here. And their problem is I have to go from this attack angle. I have to attack them but not really attack them, and get them to come into my way of thinking. Is that what you try to do? You try to get people to think the way you want them to think, and then motivate them to do what to do?
To be honest, Mike, no, absolutely not. Not to get them to think the way I want to think, but to get them to think about who they are. And so I motivate them based on who they are. I help them to connect with who they are. And then once they do that, once they really connect with who they are, it's really a little easier, makes it easier for me to motivate them, because once they stand in who they are and stand in their power, I just empower them or encourage them to take that next step, or maybe that little, you know, baby step, or either, you know, shuffle of the feet. So it's not in a sense of getting them to think the way I want them to think. It's getting them to think of who they are and getting them to think of their power, their greatness, and getting them to realize that they can walk powerfully in their greatness and change lives.
Okay, now, is this similar? But you need to get them to think that what they're doing when they change their lives, it also helps people around them. Am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely. And even though I said change, one of the key factors and the key benefit that in working with me is transformation. And so we're talking transformation, and then we're talking sustaining transformation. So when they transform, they do have an impact and will have an impact with the people that are around them that are in their lives as well. And the reason why I just want to make a distinction between change and transformation, when we talk about caterpillar, a caterpillar goes into a cocoon, and it's a transformation that's taking place. I call it from the womb to the tomb, or it's a womb and a tomb at the same time. But then what emerges from that tomb is a butterfly. And so have anyone, just bear with me for a minute, ever recall hearing about a butterfly changing back into a caterpillar?
I was just about to
ask
you that.
So I say that to say transformation, it lasts, it's different from change, but it's something that lasts and is sustaining. And so, yes, to answer your question, when they transform, they will have an impact with the people that are around them.
And the butterfly no longer even thinks or remembers that they were a caterpillar.
Absolutely. All traits, behaviors, everything that they exhibit as a caterpillar goes away, or it goes away in the transformation. And so once they emerge as a butterfly, that's the life that they live.
Okay, but, you know, it's there was an old saying I played about an hour or so ago about Hyman Roth when he was talking to the Michael Corleone, the Godfather. He said, "This is the business we have chosen." Okay,
mm-hmm.
This is the business we have chosen, but see, they still remember where they were at. So I'm saying a butterfly has changed so much, then they won't even remember where they were at.
Because
they can't go back that way anyway, because they're now a butterfly. They're not going to be crawling anymore. So when you have people, do you see the transformation in front of you when you're motivating people?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely,
and it's one of the main reasons why I'm in this field, because of the transformation, and especially with teens, it's before my eyes, and I know that's why I fell in love with what I'm doing, because you see it before your eyes, the transformation taking place, and then what I do when I work with them, I help them to sustain it. It doesn't go away. You just want to continue to walk in your greatness and use the tools and the resources that we provide to do that. So, yeah, it's so fulfilling to see transformation in both teens and adults that I work with.
Now, we didn't say what the name of your organization is that does this great work.
We did not. So The name of the organization that I work with is called Motivating the Teen Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and,
Motivating
go ahead.
The Teen Spirit is only one facet of your what you do.
That
and
is correct.
What is the name of your organization that encompasses all these other avenues for helping people?
Absolutely. So the organization, and Mike is correct, I do a lot of things, and not just things, but for me, I'm always in action. And so the key thing that I'm under, the company that I created is called Living Abundantly. That's my for-profit. I also have a nonprofit that's called Living Abundantly Youth Vision. And so with these companies, the two companies, I what I was able to do is I have my mission, I have my vision, I have my goal, but I was fortunate enough to find another company that matched exactly what it is that I'm doing. And I said, wow, this is awesome. But instead of trying to compete, instead of making them a competitor, I made them a partner. And so it wasn't much for me to hook my caboose up to their train and move in the direction that they're moving in. And that's
right.
What I did with Living Abundantly Youth Vision. When I hooked my caboose up to Motivating the Teen Spirit, and Motivating the Teen Spirit is a division of Motivating the Masses, and that's what I hooked my Living Abundantly business up to that. And so under both all of the businesses, I do a facet of things that I madly love doing.
Well, we are running out of time, but ladies and gentlemen, this young lady, Kim Grimes, is going to be with us and from now on, and she's going to give us just a little more in-depth for next week when she comes on. And what part of your company do you want to talk about next week?
So next week, I want to talk about transforming the lives of teens. And so let me just share, I'm a change agent in the community. And as a change agent, I help teens and young adults fall madly in love with who they are. I help them to open up and communicate more effectively, putting words to their thoughts and feelings. You know, when you speak to a teen or a young adult and you ask them what's going on with them, they say, I don't know. And and I don't know. But what we do is we help them to really find a word to I don't know. So I come back on next week. I'm going to talk about the workshops that we do and all of the programs that we offer as a change agent, how I'm moving in action in the community being a change agent.
Well, give us a number so someone can get a hold of you, and give us a website.
Absolutely. So to find out more information about Motivating the Teen Spirit, the website is motivatingtheteenspirit.com. There are two ways to get to us, motivatingtheteenspirit.com. You can also go to livingabundantlyyouthvision.org, and that is LAYV.org. My telephone number, and I'm going to give you my cell because that's the easiest way to get in contact with me, is 757-897-8964. And like I said, I'm always in action. So if you don't get me, please leave a message, and I will call you back.
And have a big net, because she's always in action. You got to net her.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank you very much, Kim, and I'll be talking to you this weekend.
Absolutely. Sounds like a plan. Thank you all right. Again, and have a phenomenal evening.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay.
Kim Grimes.
Bye-bye now.
Kim Grimes has given us a motivation speech for the weekend. Now I want to give you another motivating speech, which I think is one of the greatest speeches ever in the history of film.
To begin with, this case should never have come to trial. The state has not produced one iota of medical evidence that the crime Tom Robinson was charged with ever took place. It has relied instead upon the testimony of two witnesses whose evidence has not only been called into serious question on cross-examination, but has been flatly contradicted by the defendant. Now, there is circumstantial evidence to indicate that Mayella Ewell was beaten savagely by someone who led almost exclusively with his left. And Tom Robinson now sits before you, having taken the oath with the only good hand he possesses, his right. I have nothing but pity in my heart for the chief witness for the state. She is the victim of cruel poverty and ignorance. But my pity does not extend so far as to her putting a man's life at stake, which she has done in an effort to get rid of her own guilt. Now I say guilt, gentlemen, because it was guilt that motivated her. She's committed no crime. She has merely broken a rigid and time-honored code of our society. A code so severe that whoever breaks it is hounded from our midst, is unfit to live with. She must destroy the evidence of her offense. But what was the evidence of her offense? Tom Robinson. A human being. She must put Tom Robinson away from her. Tom Robinson was to her a daily reminder of what she did. Now, what did she do? She tempted a Negro. She was white, and she tempted a Negro. She did something that in our society is unspeakable. She kissed a black man, not an old uncle, but a strong, young Negro man. No code mattered to her before she broke it, but it came crashing down on her afterwards. The witnesses for the state, with the exception of the sheriff of Macon County, have presented themselves to you, gentlemen, to this court in the cynical confidence that their testimony would not be doubted. Confident that you gentlemen would go along with them on the assumption. The evil assumption that all Negroes lie. All Negroes are basically immoral beings. All Negro men are not to be trusted around our women. An assumption that one associates with minds of their caliber, and which is in itself, gentlemen, a lie. Which I do not need to point out to you. And so, a quiet, humble, respectable Negro who has had the unmitigated temerity to feel sorry for a white woman has had to put his word against two white people's. The defendant is not guilty, but somebody in this courtroom is. Now, gentlemen, in this country, our courts are the great levelers. In our courts, all men are created equal. There's no idealist to believe firmly
in the integrity of our courts and our jury system.
That's no ideal to me. That is a living, working reality. I am confident that you gentlemen will review without passion the evidence that you have heard, come to a decision, and restore this man to his family.
One of the greatest speeches ever made in any movie at any time, To Kill a Mockingbird with the great Gregory Peck, was, I mean, it was, you, if you haven't seen it, and it's in black and white, I know.
Yeah, but it's one of those classic films. And
it was written from a child's eyes, but it is so dramatic how no evidence, they had not one shred of evidence. And I don't want to tell the story about so you can go out and see it, or why, how it happens that he had no evidence in this young man. And as Gregory Peck said, he's left-handed. I mean, the person that was that killed him was evidently left, or not killed her, that beat her, was evidently left-handed. His left hand had been no use since he was 8 years old. So he could not have been the perpetrator of this crime. We have a similar in certain ways to this case, another case that's going on right now in Franklin County, and our individuals, David Adams and Lisa Krudick, have not called in yet. So we'll just talk about the people that need to go to prison, the Chris Christies,
the Scott Walkers.
Scott Walkers.
By the way,
Pat McCrory's.
You hear about Scott Walker's secret?
Oh yeah.
Internet.
Well, is that that might be in the package? Scott Walker, who is de facto a person since Chris Christie is imploding, even though he doesn't look like he's imploding yet.
Yeah. Hard to see the implosion. But
that's right. Well, you can't see Red Dwarf already exploded, so you can't see a sun when it explodes, right? Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, Scott Walker is like the poster boy of union busting.
Oh, yeah.
So, this guy.
Well, you know.
He gets richer every day.
I have never, ever, ever, ever since I've been involved in politics not been told by a leader, someone who's an elected official, who says, you cannot come to see me in my office and talk about any politics. It has to be about constituents' services. How can I help you? Is your postman, if it's a federal person, is your postman all right? Is he delivering the mail on time? If it's a city person or a county or a representative, they're saying, what can we do? Are the streets full of potholes? These are the things that they take care of. But when you go in there and say, look, I want to sit at a desk across from you and start raising money for you,
mm-hmm.
It's jail time.
Yeah.
Jail time. and we need to understand it, that there is so much corruption. I was saying it today when I first got on, that since 1942, every mayor in New Jersey has been indicted for corruption and graft. Every single, not exception of any.
Yeah.
There has only been one exception. Cory Booker.
Cory.
Is the only mayor of Trenton, New Jersey, not to be indicted. He broke the mold. They had one guy in the late 90s who was mayor for 3 weeks with a federal sting, and he took the bribe. 3 weeks he was mayor. Now, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, like an AB scheme.
3 weeks he was
mayor. Wow.
And
talk about endemic corruption.
Since 1942, every single mayor.
Wow.
I'll get that piece, and we'll have it for next week. But I mean, Cory Booker was the first one. Governors. There's only been a couple handful of governors that haven't been brought up on charges, or maybe trying to get impeached, or you resign. Don't worry, I won't run, so I won't win. But New Jersey is systemic like that.
Well, what are you going to – what outcome do you see for Christie? Do you think he's going to just wander away?
I think he can't wander away unless he stops eating those Krispy Kremes. The thing is, because we'll always find him. So what he has to do is – got me. He was on this – his own radio show. Of course, they give it – it says it's the governor's radio show. It ain't the governor's radio show. They have a part guy that does all the talking with him, and he asked them the flat-out question. We understand that you fired Bridget Kelly. He said, no, I never fired her.
What, she just...
He said, I told somebody to fire her. So he wants to keep as much distance between him and her.
Yeah.
Much insulation. I knew nothing about nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't need to, and then he said, I didn't ask questions because I knew it might be a criminal case, so I didn't want to be said that I was tampering with a witness. Here's the problem. If he thought it was a criminal case, why did he just, and is still saying it was a traffic survey?
Yeah. Can't have it both ways.
He's still saying it's a traffic survey. Right. Well, then why didn't
you
speak to her?
If you know it's bad enough that you don't even want to go on the record speaking to
him. Right.
You know it.
You know it's a traffic survey. I mean, if it looks like a giraffe, if it's 18 feet tall, and it walks on four legs, and it's spotted, it's not an owl.
Yeah. Well, look, these guys, just like Bush, when all that stuff started breaking down, the buck didn't stop there. You remember? He didn't know anything. He never heard of anything. He never had meetings. You know, they always do this. And what you want to bet, they'll have, like I said before, they'll have all the little people go down. They'll have all the fall guys. But that's the way these Republicans operate. You know, just like I was just reading here with Scott Walker. You know, he's got a – they said the secret system that he uses, the secret internet he installed, so that they don't have to be on public records.
Yeah,
so
well, as long as you bring in your own personal laptop, that's your own personal stuff. Has nothing to do with the campaign. Has nothing to do with the office.
That's
it's your
like
own personal.
All public office work. Everything for the public has to be done on public computers.
Right.
And they have their own systems. So
well,
they can
now see, this is where he might have a problem, because they were doing personal work in the governor's office and getting paid government money.
Yep.
They're supposed to have do personal work outside of the public office.
Right.
And figure out who's going to pay them. they made sure someone would pay them.
Of course. Now, isn't it always weird how they don't know what's going on in their offices? Like, he didn't know the bridge was shut down by his staff, and George W. didn't know that that guy that kept wandering around the White House under the assumed name was running a gay porn site, you know, and was an escort. Who is he? I don't know. What? You know what I mean? They always don't know what's happening right under their nose. But if something's going right.
Oh, if something's going right. Hey.
They're getting that picture taken.
If something is going right, you know we're going to know about it.
Well, you know, I'm getting tired, though, of the skirting the law jazz. I wish that we would have really strong investigatory committees and oversight and everything, because the fact that, like, for instance, that private internet system that Walker's been using, it's been in there since 2002, they said. You know, that type of stuff is just like, are you kidding me? They should have, you know, caught this earlier, not just through these emails that they've decoded and then said, oh, wait, where'd they come from? What system? You know, and the same thing with, like, the George Washington Bridge scandal. You know, that thing was going on and on and on. You're talking about you closed the bridge into New York City and nobody, you know, investigated before now, you know, find out why. And to even be able to go on camera and say, oh, it was I thought they were doing a traffic survey. That's so ludicrous, right? I mean, that would be like, you know, shutting down LaGuardia.
No, they think everybody's stupid.
Yeah, and it's like, what if we shut down LaGuardia Airport for a few weeks and then said, oh, I thought they were painting the...
Well, here's the problem. Here's the thing. They were scheduled to have it shut down for a month. That was the original plan. They found papers on that.
Yeah. And just the public outcry, they ended up having to abandon it. But again, this shouldn't be even an option to get away with this type of stuff. They should just all.
How do you say, I didn't want to interview her after he was fired because I didn't want anything unusual to be in my account with speaking to her? I didn't want anything unusual that if I spoke to her, people would say, that's a connection. And she worked for me, he says, but she worked for me through someone else. Isn't that the same thing that any CEO says? Well, yeah, he works for me, but he actually works in the drafting department, and the chief engineer is who she works for.
You know what we call that? The same way.
We call it bull,
S-H-I-T. Yeah. This is the same thing with, you know, while we can get away with having these poor Hispanics from crossing the border coming here to work, and nobody knows who hired them. Everything's a subcontractor somehow.
Subcontractor of a subcontractor.
That's exactly why, you remember Cheney's entire thing was to privatize the military over there so that when they got into trouble and they killed whole villages or they tortured people, it was all, well, we didn't hire them. That's Bob's company. And then Bob's company subcontracted out to Tim's company, and then we don't know where they came from. You know, it gives them plausible deniability, and that's the problem with that. That's why you have public systems. That's why you have a military, so that you have accountability. And it isn't just Blackwater who? They got somebody from South Africa. What? They were caught on camera doing who? You know,
Well, the thing is that yesterday, I can't remember the general's name, 3-star lieutenant general said that when he asked him about the reduction of
the army,
the armed forces. He said that this is great. We don't need it.
Right.
He said this will prevent people like Dick Cheney from having us to go to war at any time. And I'm for, if we want to go to war, draft people. Have a draft.
Right.
Just to go to war.
There's also this. You can have a standing army. We have a standing army so that we don't have to have any ramp-up time.
Right.
Okay, I understand that. But we have no need for the size of army we have.
No.
Ever since
was twice his size.
You know, Vietnam, we had continual ramp up instead of any kind of downsizing.
Right.
And it's just ludicrous that in peacetime, somehow you need that massive an army. So, I mean, it's one thing to say that, you know, during wartime we need a massive army. We just simply don't in peacetime. We can have a very, powerful, mobile, limber force, but we don't need the world's largest standing army just standing there.
Well, it
drains the economy. We could be putting all that into, healthcare or building roads or building schools or, colonizing the moon or something, anything. We don't have to stand around with guns.
Well, the thing that we have right now is an army that is underpaid, that 18% is on welfare. Oh, here it is. It's right here. I'm trying to get this, and I will tell you, admit who the general was that said this, and I was shocked. He just retired. General Paul Eaton on Dick Cheney. Read that, what he said.
Major General Paul Eaton said, Vice President Cheney is one of the architects of the worst foreign policy disaster of the 21st century. We're young, but the decision to attack Iraq and to do so in such an incompetent manner does not give him a platform to say anything about the foreign policy under execution today.
He said that at a meeting where he was asked about what Dick Cheney said. Dick Cheney says the president of the United States doesn't know what the heck he's doing because he's putting us, he's making us in a greater risk of going to war because the people say we don't have, the other nations will say, good, let's get the United States into a two-front war. They can't handle one.
Right.
Like, they don't know that those flying saucers are ours. I mean, there's a line in the movie, and since I haven't seen it yet, I can't remember quoting it, but I was talking to my cousin George today, and in the movie, it's a Captain Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you guys are in trouble. They will sink this boat before they let you take it back to the shore. And he said, they sent the SEALs here. The SEALs are not coming here to take you hostage.
Right.
He says, they don't come to take you hostage. They come to kill you. And what these people don't understand is we have more firepower.
Here's the quote from Cheney to put it in context. He said that Obama's doing long-term damage to our military, and I think the whole thing is not driven by any change in the world circumstances, but it's driven by budget considerations. Because Obama would rather spend the money on food stamps than he would on strong military in support of our troops.
Rather spend it on food stamps.
Now, one thing that's hysterical about that is that in last year alone, our armed services families had $100 million in food stamps just off military bases. That's how much we're doing. So our soldiers are the ones on food stamps to begin with. Because just like you said, they're underpaid, and they don't have the support that they should. You remember, this is one of my favorite things to bring up anytime I hear them flag wave and stomp around about how great and wonderful and militaristic they are. Under Bush and Cheney, you remember that they had all these soldiers coming back from all these. They had, to begin with, these multiple obscene deployments just year after year after year.
Some people having 10 deployments.
Yeah, unbelievable. So, and then when these people were getting wounded, mentally damaged, everything else coming back here, they gave them nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They had them sitting around. They wouldn't even go. You remember for years that Bush refused to go to any VA clinic?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to be seen with them. Wouldn't go in. They didn't want to photo op because of all the – and then they found out all the – ceilings falling down. And
that's why you didn't want to go, because they didn't want people to see that.
They didn't have any money in anything, and then suddenly they started doing it at the last year, when they were losing the presidential election.
Yeah.
But, I mean, come on. You let them lay in, rat-infested hovels, and you're telling me that you're the person supporting the military? Screw you. Our world's greatest military force of the world's greatest nation should not have $100 million per year spent on food stamps for a soldier.
$100 million a year.
I mean, come on. It's pathetic.
Okay, we have a call. caller. Hello, caller. Who's this? Hello? Hello, caller? Okay, I guess it's just someone who wants to listen. Okay. Well, we had a person. What were we talking about? This, the food stamps. I spoke to a sergeant who was here at Food Lion, and I was getting. I think I just spent $150 of food. And wine and a bunch of other stuff, like food, steaks and whatnot. And he had bread, he had milk, and he had a six-pack of beer, and he had some Coca-Cola, he had some other stuff. And he used the card, the food stamp. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a credit card. And when it fell... It's because he had it and it fell out of his hand on the floor, and I you know, normally look over. And I could see it was, what's the thing that says EBT or something like that. Anyway, I said to him, because I was right next to him, because he was doing something else. He was getting something else after he came out of his food was bagged up. And I said to him, Sergeant, told him who I was, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to know, are you on food stamps? How many there? At this is right. We're talking about Fayetteville. He says, "Oh, there's plenty of us." He says, "The problem is right now, we might have to move out of base housing because we don't have enough to pay for it." He says, "If I leave, my wife will not have enough money to sleep with my kids on our base housing." Now, this is criminal. This is criminal.
Yes, it is. And you want to talk about family values, you're destroying families when you've got dad gone for 10 years laying in sand somewhere and not paying families enough to even feed their children off. I mean, come on. So you're destroying a family. That's going to lead to divorce. That's going to lead to losing homes. That's going to lead to disrupted lives for these children. They're going to be moving everywhere, trying to, you know, go from one shelter to another or something. It's horrible.
Hello, Paula. Who's on the line? Anybody? No. Okay. Just listen. This
nice. I mean, I don't understand the whole, especially, they branded themselves this way, compassionate. You remember that whole, we're the compassionate conservatives.
Compassionate conservatives.
They brand themselves with words, but they have no deeds. I don't understand. You know, if you want to be the family values, that's good. Then support some families.
Well,
give them decent pay. You know, do something.
Well, they also have what they call this dog whistle politics. Now, there was a dog, dog whistle politics. That's what they call it. They had this guy. This is what Cheney said. Cheney says Obama prizes snap over the military, while Fox claims slackers use food stamps on strippers.
Well, we know who really uses for strippers. That'd be the Republican National Convention. You remember that law?
Oh, God, give me a break.
They went to the Whips
and Chain
Club.
Now, I want to know. He and Cheney said this on that Neil Cavuto show, the guy with the strange head. He said, "Welcome to Obama's America." Fox's Eric Bolton told his audience Tuesday with this diatribe where people now use food stamps to patronize strip clubs, liquor stores, pot dispensaries. This is, why would anybody believe that you could do that? Why would anybody, and I was talking to him, he said, "Look, we can't," he said, "the beer I pay separately with cash. I cannot buy, you can't even buy soda with the food stamps."
No. See, again, it's just lies. It doesn't matter to them. But their whole image, liberals are they're nasty. They're in strip clubs, liquor stores, and pot dispensaries. They're drug addicts. They're losers. Come on.
What got me is, I said, but, Sarge, let me tell you something. The next time, don't have the beer paid for after or before, even next year, because people will think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Just have somebody else get it for you and not get anything else but that.
Right.
Because they will connect that you are part of the problem. Part of the problem. You know, if you were white and fat with a striped golf shirt on and sitting behind the EIB microphone, people say, oh, that's quite all right. You must be Rush.
Yeah.
I mean, this Balling is another guy who never served in the military. He said the Fox Again profiled surfing freeloaders Jason Greenslate, who is allegedly living large in San Diego, thanks to the SNAP program, commonly known as food stamps. After Bill O'Reilly, errand boy Jesse Waters caught up with Greenslate again Monday night, the five used the lazy surfer as the representative of literally millions of Americans, and Boylan's words, it was epic. He's playing with the system. He's stretching the rules to their limits, Boylan said. Fox angry, fearful, mostly elderly viewers. Yeah. Over 68, would you expect, with a $105 billion program?
You might as well be running all those. You remember those movies in the 60s and stuff where it's like the hippie revolution, you know, with look, they're on LSD trips or something, you know.
Every one of them.
Yeah, they're all, look, every.
And all their kids are born from what was that park where they all met?
Woodstock.
Woodstock. They're all from Woodstock.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, I mean, look, this is like, they're all in strip clubs, liquor stores, and pot dispensaries. I mean, that's all, and they're using their food stamps to do it, you know. And they said this, what was it, a freeloading, they did a faux expose on showing it they were having a food stamp binge, is what they called it, the great binge. But then, like it says down here in this article there, you know, this came back, they've been saying it since he started because it's a racist thing to say. But, you know, they call him the food stamp president. That's what they say.
And if I can find this one.
They use the same rhetoric.
Well, and it's like this. It's even like this. I have part one. Lisa Bloom, who's a noted lawyer. Her mother is... she wrote the book. She was the one that was, oh gosh, what's her mother's name? Lisa Bloom, my famous attorney. Anyway, Lisa Bloom now has a book out. See if you find Lisa Bloom's mother. Gloria Ulrich. Gloria Ulrich is Lisa Bloom's mother. If you look closely, they look similar. But Gloria Ulrich has written has a book out now. I thought I had it here. I'm looking for it. Should be here. And Lisa has talked about it I don't know why. It's still processing, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know why, but it's still processing. So maybe I just might have to call it up again. But anyway, Lisa Bloom is talking about O.J. Simpson case. She was much, 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 much younger. She didn't do the case. She was with her mother talking about it. But she also did the Trayvon Martin case, and she did the Dunn case.
I didn't realize she was involved in Trayvon.
Oh, yeah. Well, as far as she did the reporting on MSNBC.
Right.
And the thing is, she says that it was such a crime the way they... The Dunn case and the Trayvon Martin case are so close together in the way they view things. The first thing about it is that they look at everything. They do not look through anything through the lens of being racist. And both of these cases are racist cases. I mean, and not one time they told the prosecutor. The prosecutor couldn't even bring up race in the case. Could not bring it up. Now, why not? Why could he not bring race into this case? What was wrong with doing that? When you have Zimmerman has said so himself.
Zimmerman,
in 42 times he called, mm-hmm. in the 42 times he called the police, every one of the people he said was African American. Mm-hmm. Everyone. He said, now, before that, it was a handful that were white or Hispanic or whatnot, but the last 42 times, they were African American.
Right.
So how could you not bring that into the case? Now, I want you to hear.
Because it's profiling. It's very simple.
Now, let me hear, I want you to hear a little bit. This is part one for Lisa Bloom, and I want you to hear what she says here.
There's a reason why millions of Americans can't get George Zimmerman arrested, and that's because the case is very obviously about race. And yet in the courtroom, the case was completely bungled by the prosecution on the issue of race. The defense tried to paint Trayvon Martin as a, quote, match, that was their word, a match to two African-American burglars who had been in the community 6 months before, who Trayvon Martin had no connection with, nothing to do with. And the prosecutors did not rise to their feet and say, what does it have to do with Trayvon Martin? That's highly objectionable. So they allowed the defense to own the race issue in a very illogical manner. The judge ruled that they couldn't talk about racial profiling, just the word profiling, which made no sense at all. What other kind of profiling were they talking about? The prosecution should have tried. They should have raised it on closing argument, and they should have argued their evidence that all of the calls that Zimmerman made in the 6 months prior to the shooting about suspicious people in the neighborhood were about African Americans. 100%. You don't get statistics like that very often. If you got them, argue them in the courtroom.
No.
Yeah.
How could you get 100%?
I mean, you don't get 100% of anything. I mean, this guy was dead on target, to be analogy there, but he was out for blacks. I mean, that's what he was doing.
And to prove my point,
you know, you've seen half of these security guards, quote unquote, around here. You couldn't get these guys to make 42 calls, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So the fact that he made 42 just about blacks, this guy was hell bent on finding.
Oh, absolutely.
Doing something.
And now let's hear.
And also, you know, think about this. Even on the 911 calls, they told him repeatedly, "Stop.
Stay in your car. We'll handle it from here."
And he was the instigator and not the racist.
That, I guess, don't mean anything.
But you know what I love the best about that is that he comes up now and he's got PTSD from all the stress of the coverage. All the paparazzi makes him stressed.
Well, let's hear what Representative Stephen King said about this.
And you know, there doesn't mean that there aren't groups of people in this country that you know, that I have sympathy for. I do. And there are kids that were brought into this country by their parents unknowing that they were breaking the law. And they will say to me and others who defend the rule of law, we have to do something about the 11 million. And some of them are valedictorians. Well, my answer to that is, and then, by the way, their parents brought them in. It wasn't their fault. It's true in some cases, but they aren't all valedictorians. They weren't all brought in by their parents. For everyone who's a valedictorian, there's another 100 out there that they weigh 130 pounds and they've got calves the size of cantaloupes because they're hauling 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert. Those people would be legalized with the same act. And until the folks that want to open the borders and grant this amnesty can define the difference between the innocent ones who have deep ties with America and those who have been, I'll say, undermining our culture and civilization and profiting from criminal acts, until they can define that difference, they should not advocate for amnesty for both good and evil.
Well, you know, I'm gonna give him an extra quarter because he used a word that had multiple syllables. Civilization. That's better than the usual Republican. But look, these guys are—they're unbelievably racist.
I mean, but you see,
the same thing, though,
we would not have known this if we didn't have a black president.
Yes.
It never would have come out.
But this is the same thing they were saying earlier, you know, the black president that presides over all the food stamp recipients running to get drugs, you know, and beer. I mean, this is the same thing he's saying. All the people coming across the border are all, they have strapped on their back big bales of you know, marijuana.
And how are they ducking the radar? And everything? I mean, man, they got cans the size of cantaloupes.
Hey, notice there was no investigation. And this guy didn't make a single peep in public when our CIA plane went down in Mexico full of cocaine. Remember
no.
That?
Did
and then,
oh.
Oops. Where was the outrage? Where's the investigation?
It's not our plane.
Let me just say this.
They paid it at the side.
Told me you were going to put on that clip. When you said that name, all I thought was, give me the bat, Wendy. Give me the bat. Come on. I got a surprise for you. Give me the bat, Wendy.
Oh, God, just telling you. These what? People are so racist. Hey,
they're
but,
nuts.
Listen, but,
they're racist. They're
but how about this? How about Senator Rand Paul at the HBCU? This is it.
I think if you liken using a driver's license to literacy tests, you demean the horror of what happened in the 40s and 50s, maybe probably from 1910 all the way through 1960s in the South. It was horrific. Nobody is in favor of that. No Republican is in favor of that. But showing your driver's license to have an honest election, I think, is not unreasonable.
It's not unreasonable, Mike. See, you're being the racist. Because you won't show your driver's license. You're racizing.
I'm gonna have this clip on here next week.
Nice.
Remember the clip when Blazing Saddles, and Cleveland Little goes up to the microphone and says, "Excuse me while I pull this out," and everybody's and they all scream. Well, I mean, it's the same thing here.
Holy shit. You know he's got a little problem with plagiarism. Little problem.
You mean he lies? It's the hand. It's like the hand. It writes for him. It's the
borrows.
Hand.
He just forgets to tell people. But I got to wonder about that nice little, you know, he actually tried to sound like he knew what he was talking about. He tried to, like, sound like he brought in some civil rights and beamed through some dates around. But I have to ask, did he steal it? Maybe that he lifted that line from somebody.
Well, this is Ron Paul again. You know, he says he is listening.
Republicans have been losing both the respect and votes of a group of people who already identify with many of our beliefs in family and faith and conservative values. Hispanics should be a natural and sizable part of the Republican base. Defense of the unborn, defense of traditional marriage are Republican issues that should resonate with Latinos. There's a hilarious episode on Seinfeld. Any Seinfeld fans? Where Jerry admits that he loves Asian women, but he frets and he worries. He says, is it racist to like a certain race? So it is with trepidation that I'd like to express my admiration today for the romance of the Latin culture.
I like it.
Well, now, I just want to top this over with the latest. Did you hear what Paula Deen said lately?
Butter Deen? What did my Butter Deen say?
She was being interviewed, and she said, I guess she was referring to the...
did she use the word slather?
The gay basketball player and the gay football player, you know, that come out.
Yeah.
And he said, well... they asked her about whether or not she was getting her reputation back, and she said that, oh, so difficult, so difficult. I wish I could be like one of them, those black ball players, and get my reputation back.
Hey, by the way, I'll have to give a tip of the hat to the NFL this week. They played a major part in slapping down the near debacle that
Arizona. That's right.
And when they said, we are pulling the Super Bowl, I think that was the final.
Well, the last throw
to them. In the coffin, because they had so many businesses coming. But I love, after that, they had one other businessman said, if the NFL is pulling up, we're all pulling out. There's no, I mean, there's, you know.
Well, the thing is
so
that,
give it to them.
You know, that they have two basketball teams there. Mm-hmm. football team and two baseball teams. So the Dodgers closed up for, I think, 60 years, 70 years, no, more than that. It must have been 80 years in Florida,
yeah.
Dodger Town, and they're out now in Arizona with the, I think it's the Angels, one of the big, huge facilities.
Spring transplant.
Right.
Dry.
That's right. So the thing is that they would be in deep trouble in Arizona.
Did you see that that faux travel poster they had for Arizona going around doing it?
Yeah.
It said, come to Arizona. It's a dry heat.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a dry heat. Yeah. I think one of the guys last night said that. I can't remember who that was. But they have one more here about the Looney Tunes of Rand Paul. And let's listen to this.
Who are these terrorists that live among you? People who might be missing fingers on one hand, people who might have stains on their clothing, people who might have changed the color of their hair, people who like to pay in cash, people who own more than one gun, people who own weatherized ammunition, people who have 7 days of food in their house. I will speak until I can no longer speak. No, no, said the Queen. Everybody is Al-Qaeda. Hold your tongue, said the Queen, turning purple. If there's a gentleman or a woman with a grenade launcher attacking our buildings or our capital, we use lethal force. No, we won't drop bombs on restaurants. Your notification is the buzz of the propellers on the drone as it flies overhead in the seconds before you're killed. Is that what we really want from our government? Gobbledygook, the leap of logic is so fantastic as to boggle the mind. The drone strike program is sort of like a lawnmower. I don't intend to break the First Amendment, but I might. Who's going to decide when it's okay to have food in your house and when it's not? See, there are a lot of questions that aren't being asked. You believe in the Constitution so much, you might be a terrorist. I'm not talking about someone with a bazooka or a grenade launcher on their shoulder. I was at a Tea Party meeting and I was critical of the president. But I'm not a revolutionary. Please don't kill me. My throat's already dry and I just got started. I mean, and if you don't answer it, basically, by not answering it, you're saying yes. I would feel a little more comforted if it weren't an accusation by a politician that unleashes hellfire missiles. Democracies did bad things. I ask, do we know where all the students are? The answers that we've gotten are almost more disturbing than getting an answer, really, to tell you the truth. I don't think the president would purposely take innocent people and kill them. I really don't think he'd drop a hellfire missile on a cafe or a restaurant like I'm talking about. You might have a drone attack you in your bed tonight. If you're going to kill non-combatants, people eating dinner in America, there have to be some rules. Probably, inevitably, the milkman's got to go to the terrorist camp, too, or the doctor as well. It's hard to know what to believe.
Now, that was a compilation of our great senator from...
Gattaca.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I played right now.
I mean to tell you, this is the people that are representing us.
I don't think he'd kill innocent people. But he might drone suck you in your bed tonight. Hey, fearmonger much?
I mean to tell you.
What a... wow. Hey.
Now.
The scary part is, in the whole Tea Party, Republican Party, he's the smart one.
Yeah, he's the smart one. Listen, we have... this is what is being spread out there. This is what brought... And this is what happened when we elected a black president. All the roaches, all the snakes, everything was dormant, was wide awake now.
Yeah.
They just came out and
they were under the sheets.
They were under the sheets,
nice and quiet,
quiet,
sleeping,
dormant.
Daylight. What the heck?
I mean, it almost seems like it's getting worse the longer it goes.
Mm-hmm. No, it's because it's been this downhill slide of this frenzy, you know, one feeding the next, and the one person has to be more extreme than the next and say something worse than the next. You know, it is going downhill.
But look,
I remind you,
they,
you know, you remember the rallies back during the re-election where they were standing around with guns and with posters and all kinds of stuff, and they would always, after the fact, when someone took a picture of it, and go, "Well, I didn't know that guy was standing behind me."
Oh yeah, with that big,
the horrible statement about Obama, or with the Nazi swastika, or with whatever, you know. It's like the Republicans never knew that they were on Capitol Hill.
Never knew that they were on Capitol Hill.
They played up to the crazies, and now look at what they got. They got people like, you know, Wild Man Nugent.
They played up to the crazies, and they don't know how to put it back in the bottle.
Here's a perfect example of that. You had this article right here on
the
Heritage Foundation. You know, the Heritage Foundation used to be the think tank of the Republican Party.
Think
it was where
tank.
They came up with
think
all these policies
tank.
And these things to counter the Great Society and counter the New Deal and counter all liberal thought.
Right.
So this was their foundation.
But they had a thought.
This is what
the liberal thought.
But then they said, under DeMint, did you read this whole thing?
Yeah.
Under DeMint, he has turned it into a political hack community for the Tea Party.
Right.
And they said he's destroyed it. He's turned. He's quit doing any research. They just put out stuff. He said he renamed it the Salesforce.
Right. Well, yeah. Right.
And then on this board part that I thought was so sad, they had these old founders. And
well, they're all leaving.
These old guys, yeah, they're all leaving. And they said, he goes, Mickey Edwards, for instance, founding trustee of it, said he, DeMint has not only politicized Heritage Group now, he has trivialized it, and our influence is waning. They said now in Washington, politicians, even Republican Party members, refuse to meet with them. They won't get photographed with them now. They said they turned their backs on them, and they've even so far as to shut them out of hearings, out of public
hearings. Well, the thing is that they're paying for these other people, the Tea Party people, to they don't care if the Republican Party goes in the toilet and is flushed. I was asked by five or six people, why use that horrible phrase, you rather reign in hell than serve in heaven? Because this is what these guys are doing.
Yes.
They'd rather reign in hell than serve
they
in heaven.
They would rather be the absolute king of the dung heap than to, you know, be in the palace.
Absolutely.
And that's what is sad. But, you know, this is what we've gotten to now. Even their think tank has been destroyed, and the founding members are all leaving. The party has become a joke. It's imploded, and now it's nothing but the extremists.
I was waiting to hear from an update from David Adams and Shannon Namodi's mother, Elizabeth Kurdick, but we did not hear from them. I know there are some things that are thrashing around, so maybe it's for the good.
Yep.
We'll hear. And I want everybody to have a good, good weekend. This is the end of the show, and I am going out with a great theme. You'll all recognize it because played some of the speech today. Good night and have a great weekend.
Thank you.